This is the Team Builders Podcast, building better teams.
And the investment comes that effectively gives you listening, empowering, trusting and security. Let's go. Let's listen. Let's empower. Let's trust and let's secure.
This is the Team Builders Podcast with Stephen Haseley, Jerry Crowley and Jonathan Haseley.
Hello and welcome to the Team Builders Podcast, the podcast where you get to learn all about what it takes to be part of a great team. I am delighted to say that we've got a very special episode today. We are joined by our guest, well-esteemed Mr. Robert Fitzpatrick, the Chief Executive of the Odyssey Trust Company, which runs the Odyssey Entertainment Venue in Belfast. Now, the Odyssey hosts concerts by international artists, exhibitions, huge sporting events, and is of course home to the Belfast Giants ice hockey team, which we'll be chatting to Robert about very shortly. I know we're very excited about that. Robert has been heavily involved, and his efforts have made a huge difference in the Odyssey to make it not just an entertainment venue, but also a learning environment for young people, especially those from underprivileged areas in and around Belfast. His involvement in the Friendship 4 tournament, a college ice hockey tournament between Belfast and Boston, shows his dedication to connecting cultures through sport and education. Before running the Odyssey, Robert came from a background in property development, and alongside his current role, he is a visiting professor at the Ulster University Business School and was recently honoured as the Leader of the Year at the European Club Alliance Annual Awards. So we are in very esteemed company. Robert, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined by Stephen and Jerry, who are looking forward to seeing you too.
Robert, great to see you, and it's nice not to be having a face-off this time between Aberdeen and Belfast Giants. I'm sure nothing will kick off this afternoon.
It's already kicking off, Jonathan. Great to be here. And Stephen, I see you. And Robert, big welcome from me as well.
Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, I got some lowball questions. So the hard stuff will come from Jonathan, I bet you.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. We really appreciate your time. I'm definitely the griller, Robert. I'll have the big, punching questions later on in the interview. I'm going to go straight with Jerry, who's going to hopefully tee us off with maybe some of the early experiences in your career and where that brought us to today, Robert.
I'm sure a lot of people know a lot about you as well, but just for those that maybe don't, would you have an early thought or an early experience of when team management came into play in your early career?
I mean, I could go through the whole sports regime, Jerry, but, that's pretty much going from what effectively was a lifeguard center attendant in a university sports center to becoming the managing director of an entertainment complex with him. I was 28 and getting tired of that and then moving across into property. The property stuff and the way that you work as a team player, and I was very much a team player learning my role when we moved into property. And the very first lesson that you take from that is that you have to have a very well-defined sense of order and accountability. Because if you don't know your role and you can't play your part, you break the chain. So the discipline of that order lends you to understand that you don't really necessarily need to know what's going on in the next room. But if they need you to do something to make what they do happen easier, you've got to be able to do it. So the order and accountability. In the particular firm that I worked for, they used to have what they called hot conversations, which were honest, open and transparent. And they invited any of us to, if you like, throw in our tuppence worth around how they might develop their culture. And one of the things that I still do to this day, I'm now thankfully in a position to affect this, is that I think blame is a redundant emotion. So the idea of coming out of order and accountability and having the confidence to say we are a no blame culture organization meant that people felt not instructed, they felt empowered.
Yeah.
And because they felt empowered, there was an acceleration of communication, an acceleration of openness, because there wasn't the blame culture. Yeah. That resonated with me deeply. The other thing that resonated with me deeply was, I'm going back now into the sort of middle 90s, when technology was starting to raise its head. And at that time, all of the methodology within property was essentially developed by Gantt. And Gantt methodology effectively meant that if you had no blame culture, then you didn't have to hide. And because you didn't have to hide, you were able to own your part.
Yeah.
Now, for the 4 or 5 years that I sort of moved through that phase, it became very apparent to me that I was winning my, whether they be battles with tenants, conversation with peers, negotiations with my line managers and bosses, was that there was an unbelievable humility came from knowing that, because you knew that you would be listened to. So you didn't have to be bombastic or egocentric or any of that sort of stuff. You could maintain a level of humility. And from that, I started to develop what has become my central mantra for today in my leadership role. And it's a very simple one. You don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And because now there's such an awareness of the capacity for emotional intelligence to play a role in how you actually manage people, your ability to listen and absorb nearly to the fact where you've become a sponge. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of anagrams, big fan of anagrams. So sponge for me is to seek the mission, prepare, orientate, nurture, grow, and then an experience. That's for me what a sponge is. And it sort of, it creates in many respects, personally, a huge diversion of energy. And if you don't manage it, you lose it on yourself.
Yeah.
So within that framework, your discipline had to be second to none.
I mean, so you sometimes you hear, you know, because you pass it through time and technology takes the ability of what you would like it to be to help it to become. And sometimes you hear the leader should always speak last. But most of the time, as leaders, we walk into a room, we start speaking first, you know, so that really strikes it.
I mean, people have asked me about the power of delegation. Well, if you empower people, you don't need to delegate. It's an oxymoron. You don't need to do it. If you empower people and you're working in a no-blame culture, well, then the competency of the mistake is the next success. So for me, this notion of employee ownership of their part, you shouldn't feel that as a threat. You shouldn't feel that as some sort of a piece that you've given away.
Yeah,
it's
more a piece
that you've brought in. I'm a very strong believer in how that whole concept of the energy, the idea, and the ability of your employee is at the heart of everything that you do. And the fundamental of that has to be how you develop and deliver your own experience.
Listen, you know? Robert, we should have a separate podcast just for this conversation.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, so many tick boxes that we want to go back to. But, you know,
Robert, you know, some of the stuff that you're talking about there, is, do you find that leadership style was born really early and that you have, you know, just continued that through, or has it adapted and changed a lot over the years and the different things that you've done, you know, from early career right to where you are now?
I think it's been shaped by technology, Jonathan. So, you know, in the Odyssey, we have what we call the Odyssey Way, and it's driven by a thing called BEAT. And BEAT is effectively the best experience every time. Okay.
Awesome.
And that best experience every time is driven by a series of X's. So if you can imagine, the center of your customer experience is the impact of your employee experience.
Yeah.
So for your customer experience to elevate to the levels of excellence that you require and are going to get paid for, your employee experience has to be on the same level. Because if they're not having a positive experience, they're not going to translate, or they are going to translate the not so positive experience to the customer. Now, that's then magnified by, I think it's what we call as MX. And MX is coming from the mandatory expectations that COVID and post-COVID has positioned my particular industry. So take, for example, the day the Manchester bomb report came out, every CEO in the UK curdled, because the mandatory expectation that that new report and the new laws that were coming and the new protect laws that were coming changed the game. So that meant that the customer had an expectation of a mandatory requirement to keep them safe, keep them clean, and that had to be embraced as a specific pillar. So you have your MX, which is mandatory, you have your EX, which is employee, and that gives you your customer experience. And then coming in on the top of that is data and where all your DX goes. So effectively you end up with like a hybrid of ACDC, your MEDC. You end up with a hybrid where you're looking at mandatory expectation, employee expectation, data expectation to give a customer experience. And that's the world I'm in now. And that's driven by technology. Now, that's not to say that the application of common sense isn't the final ingredient. It is, of course it is. But it's made very easy by an orientation where it's there to be your slave. it's there to be used.
I'm already on page four of the Ackermans, Robert. I love them.
Yeah, yeah.
We're right. I definitely got to remember beat. That's best experience every time. I spelled beat with an A for a while, but now I got it.
Beat. It will have taken you a while to figure out how to spell experience with an A, Jerry. I'm going to bring you in because Robert's been talking quite a lot about the Odyssey in particular. And I know that you've got a lot of experience with both, you know, enjoying events in the Odyssey Arena and being part of some special things as well. So I'm sure you have got some great questions for Robert.
Robert, growing up in Northern Ireland, I think the audience can hear my accent right from the off. There was not a huge amount of either public or private opportunities in leisure and recreation. And what do you think was the motivation for the designers and the builders originally for the Odyssey? Was that a huge leap of faith, which has now played its way out into success? Was that in the early days a huge leap of faith, or was it a given that that was always going to be its destiny?
So you had what essentially was a private developer who convinced the Belfast Harbour to sell him a very valuable site for little or no money. He convinced the Millennium Commission that if Wales were getting the Principality and Scotland was getting the Science Centre and London was getting the Millennium Dole, that Belfast had to get something. So we put together a scheme where, at that stage, a White Elephant 10,000-seat arena in Belfast was never envisaged, never in a million years. We went to the King's Hall to see shows. That was it.
Yeah.
So nobody could have ever envisaged something five times the size of it. And then W5 was a pipe dream of a couple of people who seen the opportunity for it to develop and to bolt it together. And pretty much for the first 5 or 6 years, 7 years, my organization sat in guardianship. We had 9 employees and we ran the car park. The evolution of the Odyssey, as you know it now, Stephen, was going back into property days, winning a couple of battles, winning a couple of wars, and then euphemistically, if you like, putting Humpty back together. So that Humpty, instead of being these disparate, separate organizations, it brought back to the centre under the control of one. And thankfully, we've been able to do that.
We've all been subject to travelling around loads of different arenas and venues, hotels, et cetera, et cetera. The unsuccessful venues that we recognise are those who believe if you build it, they will come. But that doesn't happen. You have to put a huge amount of effort into it, as you said, about your customer experience, your client experience. And how do you think, you know, your management style and your techniques and your staff development motivation, how do you think you've been able to harness that so that it's always a winning experience, despite what the result is on the ice? How do you make that feel-good factor?
I would push back a little bit in that I would say to you, actually, if you build it, they will come. But what people forget is that it's not just about bricks and mortar.
Yep.
You have to build your culture and put your culture alongside. The sort of anecdote that I tend to use here is you can get on a train to go from A to B. There's two sides of the track. They're both going to the same destination, but they never cross. And the philosophy is, yes, you can put the hardware, building bricks, build it and they'll come. But whilst you're doing that, over here, you have to have the representation of what your customer sees the outcome to be, or where you're going to volumize your profit, where you're going to volumize your experience, where you're going to volumize a return. Yep. Now, if you listen in the first instance, you'll learn an awful lot more than if you speak. The old sort of two ears, one mouth was given to you for a reason. Listen twice as much as talk. I'm a huge believer in empowerment. I think empowerment allows you to very quickly find out depth and the ability of your team. I'm a huge believer in trust. I think trust has to be earned. And I think before you can trust, you have to believe. So if you're asking a cleaner to come in an hour earlier because you've done a flip from, let's say, Luke Combs, country artist, set a new attendance record in the arena, and he's playing on the Saturday night, and the Giants are on at 4 o'clock on the Sunday, and you've got to do a 16-hour flip. So right through your organization, Stephen, the idea that that cleaner knows you listen, that cleaner knows that he or she has a framework with which they operate in, that cleaner trusts you that they'll get their overtime and they'll be thanked and they'll get all their various bits and pieces, it means that you're securing their belief. Now, if they believe you, they'll trust you.
Yep.
And we've done a huge amount of work around capitalizing on, you know, the old adage, and I mean, you've been listening to this for years. You boys are testament to this. Well, the harder you work, the luckier you get. So everybody that works hard has to capitalize on the luck they create. And in most circumstances, especially when you're in the business of building teams, you got to be lucky. You've got to be able to spot the disciple. And that disciple has to be able to bring at least 5 converts with them every time they talk. So in other words, if you're sitting in a senior management team, and we've got a very flat organization, I have two reports. I have a chief operating officer and I have a chief experience officer that report to me.
Yeah.
They have two reports. That's it. We keep it flat. And we basically, I suppose, measure ourselves on our ability to plan, our luck at recruitment, as well as there being a no-blame culture. That creates another benefit for you that some firms and some companies don't really get. A no-blame culture equates to a no-excuse environment. Because if you're not going to blame, what's the requirement for an excuse? So if you remove the need for people to make excuses, there should be an elevation of trust. If the elevation of trust is coming from your belief in them and their belief in you, then you get this investment that comes. And the investment comes that effectively gives you listening, empowering, trusting, and securing. Let's go. That's simply what it is. Let's listen. Let's empower. Let's trust. And let's secure. And if you're into that let's space with any member of your team, you're in good shape.
Absolutely, Robert. It's phenomenal to listen to. You know, with some of that in mind, do you have a particular team achievement, you know, at any part of your career that really stands out to you and you think, yes, we need it? Other than those football medals that you've no doubt won along the way.
No. I'm going to talk to you about three that have really sort of stood out. The first one was the fault of my daughter, Kira.
Yes.
Who, December 3 years ago, said to me, I want you to meet a lady from Ardoyne in North Belfast. And she said to me, she ran a food bank. And she said, last year we fed 270 families. We need somewhere this year because we think we're going to have to feed 4,000. And we gave them the arena. We handed the arena over and we simply said to them, look, this can be your Santa Claus base. Take all your food and all your toys here. Now, what was particularly satisfying about that was that culture of can do and that culture of participation. I have got 161 full-time staff. This was in the middle of COVID. 142 of them volunteered to work the food bank.
Yeah.
So that was the first one that made me, I left you with a fairly significant lump on your throat. That quickly followed by the arena then transforming itself into a space where we gave out 423,000 COVID vaccinations. And if you want humility and you want humbling, watch doctors and nurses work for 18 hours a day on a turnaround. You'll never work another day in your life because you're not. You don't earn the right to.
Yeah.
The third one is a sports one. It would have to be. So the Giants had just won the treble and there was a week's opportunity between the end of the playoffs and the British players going to Team GB for the World Championships. And I had been contacted by a colleague in Winnipeg who had told me about the Hockey Can't Stop tour in Ukraine. And we were put in touch with the Ukrainian authorities. And my only quest was that if they're going to send a hockey team that we're going to raise money for, it has to come from the war zone.
Yeah.
And they sent us, like, we 10 days to organize this. And they sent us Dnipro Kherson. They had a 27-hour exit strategy to get out of Ukraine through Poland to come to Belfast to play.
Yep.
We organized the game in a week. We sold nearly 7,000 tickets. And at the end of the game, we gave the Ukrainians 70 grand.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
So in the scale of accomplishment, I would have said yes or no to what was going. That was my role. And then I stood back and watched the team deliver what we believed to be what we should deliver. And those have been very, very humbling and very, I suppose, thought-provoking when you're on a platform like this, because many people will say, oh, well, it was the MTV Awards, it was the World Championships. It was this. Yeah. No, those things are work. Those things happen. Yeah. These were things that were out of the ordinary that was done by people for people.
Yeah. It's always, you know, the great things when you hear people like yourself, it's always through their opportunity that they do great things. Not to do great things for the opportunity. I think that's a...
Agreed. I think altruism, it's a bandied about word, but true altruism is exactly what you've just said.
Yeah.
Where you're not looking for an opportunity. Yes, did it go wall-to-wall TV? Were we on the back of every paper?
Of course we were.
But that's because you're essentially pressing their conscience buttons and saying, well, wow, if they can do it, We can do it. And that's why that moniker of in the land of the giants, everyone is equal.
Yep.
That effectively means that you don't have to you don't have to embrace campaign marketing. So we don't have to worry about pride coming around every year. We don't have to worry about disability. We don't have to worry about trans. We don't have to worry about sexual orientation. Because in the land of the giants, everyone is equal. So we've already done it. So what's your cause? Yes, of course you can come in. We take you in. Because in our space, we don't do flags. We don't do other sports. It's hockey as an enabler for conversations about better times.
Robert, as someone who's enjoyed the incredible experience of being at the Odyssey, I understand that it's a multifaceted entertainment event venue. So how does success on the ice from the Giants relate through to success and motivation and morale boost for your own team work within the Odyssey? And again, how does that filter in to the success overall of the entertainment venue and being a draw for people who are not just supporters of the Giants, but supporters of your entire arena and facilities?
So we have what we call the Odyssey Way. And the easy answer to your question is that the cleaners own the team. Because we're all one. So there's no separation of ownership between W5, the car park people, the arena, the facilities people, the food and beverage people. We control everything from within. So that effectively means that on a Giants night, the cleaning supervisor, the security supervisor, the duty manager, the team themselves, and probably the senior executive be branded Giants. The emphasis on ownership is because for the first 12 years of Giants' existence, they were a tenant and they were owned independently and they paid us rent and they were treated like a tenant, which was shabble. It took us the best part of 3 years to orientate our own people into understanding that this thing, this organization, if you like, could at the start of every year write 34 nights of business. So 34 nights where the cleaner had to clean, security had to secure, F&B had to sell. And over a period of time, they started to realize, actually, my ability to get my money at Christmas is determined by how successful these guys are on the ice. So if they're playing well, more people are coming, which means more people are spending. And to give you, to try and put it into a financial context, when we took the Giants over, the arena business works on well, I'm sure you're aware of this, works on per caps, per cap spend. When we took the Giants over, the per cap spend at a Giants game was 79p per person. The per cap spend at a Giants game now is north of £12. The season ticket holders that we had when we took it over was just shy of 400. This year, we've sold 2,600 season tickets. The average crowd was somewhere between 2,800 and 3,000. We now sell out 6,000. We have A, B, and C classification games, and this will resonate well with the Scottish audience. We would classify Dundee and Fife as C games.
Come on, Robert.
Okay.
We used to be friends.
So we would have a budget expectation around how a C game would perform. A B game would be a Coventry or a Manchester or a Nottingham. And an A game is a Sheffield and a Cardiff, because it's really around what you do on the ice. Because we won the treble last year, we've everybody's got an X on our back because we're the team to beat. And we've started the season 13-0. We haven't been beaten yet. And we've been in the Champions League and we've beaten three of the major European teams. But anyway, I'll not get into that. But here's the point that I'm making. So you now have a scenario where your mapped contribution to all of the other sections of your business is driven 34 nights a year by something that you own. So that enculturation that I've talked about, Stephen, and that enculturation of you know, being passionate about the employee experience means that you recognize the players as employees. You don't recognize the players as player and bespoke them. You bring them in. And they have the same expectations. My single biggest investment at the end of the season wasn't to take the guys out for a drink because they won the treble. It wasn't. It was that this year's team walked back into a locker room that's had £100,000 spent on it, because that inculcates winning. If you're winning on the ice, you're absolutely winning off the ice. And the Giants model is based on everyone is a giant on a Giants game. You've seen it. Everyone's a giant on a Giants game.
And there's many businesses out there that want that for their business, Robert. You know, so it's great to hear that you tore it down and you rebuilt it. And it took like 3 to 5 years because it can't be done overnight. And that message, you know, when people listening who have businesses or work for businesses, that's a big message. That it
Well, that's very true, Jerry. I mean, I'm going to give you a couple of very simple examples that you will understand, right? So the principal sponsor for the Giants from I took it over has been the same sponsor.
Yeah.
Right. Now think of the business opportunity and the business model here. It's Dentalane.
Yeah.
Dentalane have been writing a six-figure sum to me for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's not the Belfast Giants. It's the Dentalane Belfast Giants.
Yeah.
When the fans know this, because they're sold out when they're announced, Dentalane will put two ferries a year on, fill them with fans, and take them out for a spin.
Yeah.
They get halfway across and turn and come back.
Yeah.
Right.
They load the boat up with games, right? And they get the advantage of maybe 600 fans in the boat, eating, drinking, and buying merchandise. So that's on the most overt side. On the other side of that, I've got a university from Boston who, on the back of the Giants story, has given me 5 master's programs to give to players for recruitment. Now, you want to do a master's in Boston, it'll cost you £80,000 a year. $80,000 a year. You come to Belfast as a really good hockey player. You can do a master's for very little money, and your master's is free, and we pay you sustainable money, which means we could recruit the best teams. But to get back to the 5 example I was talking to you about, so we would do a budget capture for somebody like 5 would be somewhere between 22,000 and 25,000 for that game. We played 5 last Sunday. And the staff came, all of the staff, the F&B staff, the operations staff, came to me and said, look, Chief, we've got an idea around Oktoberfest. Will you let us roll it? We said, fine, off you go. They put on what probably has to be the worst hockey jersey I have ever seen in my life. It was actually that bad. It was good. They sold currywurst, bratwurst, and they convinced the bar to buy 2 pint steins of beer. The actual performance on the day, because of this staff ownership idea around Oktoberfest, doubled the budget I did.
It's just so good, isn't it? It really is.
Well, it is. And I'm giving you that detail because I want to try and demonstrate how the thing's owned.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what it comes to.
I really want to talk about the multifaceted entertainment aspect of the Odyssey because it also includes theatre and concerts, stunt shows, et cetera, et cetera. You know, do your customers come to you or do you go out to your customers to attract that business?
Muhammad goes to the mountain and the mountain comes to Muhammad.
Yeah.
And the way that works is I don't spend any money on above the line marketing. All of my money is spent on TikTok, Meta, social media channels. We've just been awarded for the 5th year running Charity Champion of the Year in the Social Media Awards.
Yeah.
We tend to, if you get an A concert, it sells itself.
Yeah.
Right. And the expectation is that you're satisfying the promoter's expectations because he has to satisfy the artist's expectations.
Yeah.
And that's behind the scenes. Out front, you're satisfying the customer's expectation around cold beer, hot food, no queues, clean toilets. That's it. That's all they care about. But the bit that sometimes, and other arenas unfortunately forget this, is that the customer experience is not only their responsibility, it's also the biggest part of their income generation.
Yeah.
And the bigger arenas that they've said, look, we're only about sponsorship and rent.
Yeah.
And don't care what the third party food provider does. And we don't care what the third party security guy does. And we don't care what the third party cleaners will mean that if a tour comes into the UK and you've gone to an arena that you've had a bad experience, you'll not go back to it.
Yeah.
You'll go to an arena where you've had a good experience.
Yeah.
And you'll consider the fact if you're taking your wife and you want to go into a box, the food warm, the cold, beer's cold, and that you're going to be treated with dignity and spoken to, as defers the amount of money that you spent to get access. So there's little fundamental things like that. But in fairness, most of the stuff now is all done below the line. We've recently embraced AI. So all of my incoming inquiries to both W5 and the arena is done on chat box.
Yeah.
We don't have any human, we have no human engagement anymore on our inquiries. It's all done on chat box.
But you can still give us three good looking influencers some free tickets for the indoor World Motocross Championships next year. I mean, we are influencers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is you'll never change.
Yeah.
Man's got to have vision and motivation, you know that.
Yeah, man's got to have freebies, Stephen.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just on the AI, I feel you can do that when your product and your placement is secure in the market. You know, so you've created the Odyssey experience, and that's not just in your head anymore. The people feel that. So when they're calling, they're not thinking they're speaking to an AI. They think they're speaking to a well-organized outfit.
Of course.
And I think that's the win, because if you added AI, just, you know, plugged it in.
Well, that's true, Jerry, but you've also got to remember, even for organizations like yourselves, data is the new oil, and we will be probably the earliest adopter of CRM and ERP.
Yeah.
Right. And we have gone from what I used to call and what I still do call, we've gone from having customers to having customers.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to find a customer's DNA. We don't want customers.
Yeah.
DNA. They're not used. They're worthless. But within the concept of our ERP and our CRM, we're now at the stage where we'll be the first arena in the UK to have Amazon Go. And we'll probably be the first arena in the UK to start the whole exploration of the minority report. We'll be there ahead of the posse because Northern Ireland's always been a test market.
Yeah.
But it's been embraced by, as you rightly said, Jerry, and you've made a very, very valuable point.
Yeah.
It's based on the principle that if you take the three little pigs and the three houses, if you build it of straw, you build it in sand.
Yeah,
it isn't going to stand up. You got to build it in brick. And when it's built in brick and isn't going to get blown down, you can put the extension on. And sometimes the extension is, be it chat box, be it data assimilation, whatever the case may be.
So now we get the opportunity to work with young graduates a lot, but not in the position to influence them overly. And I know you're a visiting professor at Ulster University Business School. So I just thought, what's your key message for young people coming into the working world?
Wow, that's a great question. And I'm not even sure that young people now their expectations have got to the point where listening to somebody that's old is now redundant. If I was giving myself as a 20-year-old advice, given the journey that I've been on, the soundest piece of advice I would give myself, because I've adopted it in my life, is that every day you don't learn is a day lost.
Or progress with learning, isn't it? Because like I heard you mention TikTok and AI, and you say, you are an older business person, and it's easy not to put your effort into how that works and just think it's irrelevant. So it's fresh and great to hear, you know. So,
Jerry, look, you know, you can interpret and reinvent yourself. You can do what you can do. When you're in with power, becomes responsibility. So when people say to me, "What's the most redeeming or endearing thing that happens to you when you talk to your staff?" It's actually fear. And I'll tell you why. Because if I'm doing, we do State of the Nations twice a year. The midpoint is done by the head of experience and the COO. I do the end of year, which is essentially a measurement of what I said the previous year.
Yeah.
Okay. And people say to me, you know, you must be incredibly proud. You must this, blah, 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 blah. And I say, you don't understand. When I go into that room, and there's 120 or 130 people say, "This is what I see."
Yeah.
I see 130 mortgages.
Yeah.
That's what I see. And they're relying on me to continue to pay them or have the wherewithal. So my reminder to them is, in order for me to do my job, they've got to do theirs.
Yeah.
And it becomes that rotation around, don't ever, ever be afraid to learn.
That. And what a great way to wrap that for us, Robert. Thank you so much. You've been enormously generous with your time. We really appreciate it. It's been great speaking to you. We feel privileged to have you in our company, and I've learned a lot. I know we have all learned a lot whenever it comes to what our listeners will think. Folks, Mr. Robert Fitzpatrick, thank you so much for being with us. I can tell our listeners that if you haven't been to the Odyssey, and in particular, if you haven't been to a Giants night, you need to get there, because it is one of the best experiences you'll ever have. Robert, I'm going to hook you up afterwards for another one of those pump action, you know, guns that shoot the t-shirts into the audience. If I can get myself one of them, that's the preview.
Jonathan, you're missing a trick, son. We've moved on from that now.
It's even more.
Warrior are our equipment provider.
Yes.
I was in a stadium in America, and the latest gimmick to the game night is we now have 25 Warrior parachutes that we drop off.
Food parachutes.
Amazing. And on the end of the parachute is a prize. And there's nothing better on a period break than watching the scramble and the burgers and the Coke and everything else going leftwise as somebody's trying to reach to get the warrior parachute. So
That sounds like an experience in itself. Robert, thanks again so much. From myself, from Stephen, and from Jerry, thank you so much for being here. This has been the Team Builders Podcast. And that's it for this episode. If you want to learn any more about any of the other episodes that we have on our website, check it out, teamchallenge-company.co.uk. It's bye from us for now. And thanks again to Robert Fitzpatrick. Thank you.
My pleasure.